the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today and the NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And back after a little bit of a break, it's a regular show. With me is Revenge of the Birds, Seth Cox, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, SB Nation's Revenge of the Birds, also one of the hosts of the original breakdown, original draft breakdown podcast, Seth. How's it been getting the time off, getting out of town for a little bit, and then getting the kiddos back in school?
It's been busy. I wish it was not, but, you know, five kids that all do athletics and things like that, it's been even busier. So it's, you know, it's been Tuesday nights were nice, but at the same time, we still had practices. So just, man, I came home and ate dinner at 8 o'clock instead of coming home, eating dinner at 8 o'clock, then jumping on a podcast.
Well, we're back in podcast season, and everything just got busy for us for the next several months because the Arizona Cardinals reported for training camp on Tuesday. This is episode 447. This is our training camp preview. So if you haven't, over the last 2 weeks, I had 14 opponent preview shows in 14 days. Those are all available. And, you know, hopefully you've subscribed so they're already on your device. But starting with the NFC West teams, then the last place teams on their schedule, then the AFC North teams, and then the NFC East teams. I talked to 14 USA Today NFL Wire managing editors and or writers and talked about the Cardinals, kind of previewed those Cardinals opponents for the coming season. So catch those shows. They were, you know, if you were a little bit bored, they've got so much content. But Seth is back. It's time to talk training camp.
Well, and just for those, if you do miss them on Jess's site somehow, some way, I'm about 3 days behind, so they end up on my site as well. So you'll definitely have opportunities to see them if for some reason you missed them on Jess's site.
And if you haven't subscribed to the show yet somewhere on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, come on, what are you doing? We are literally at the 10-year mark of this show. Then, and I believe, exactly. Yeah, I think, I can't remember the date, but it was like this week in 2013 when I did the premiere show. I think I did a solo show, and then I did I ranked to the quarterbacks back in the day, and then I had a little interview with Larry Fitzgerald through one of his endorsements, and then we kind of started everything. So, yeah, but training camp, they reported, they did their media day. I'm pretty sure they did their physicals, although that might be tomorrow because they didn't make any POP moves or anything like that. They did a couple of minor roster moves. But there were some roster moves they made. We'll talk about those, and then we'll basically preview kind of our expectations for training camp, what we're most looking forward to, not talking about position battles, where we think the most interesting position and roster battles are, and try to pick out a few players who might surprise over the course of training camp and the preseason. So let's go ahead and get started. The Cardinals announced 5 player additions and 2 deductions from the roster. They went into this week with 3 roster vacancies. They had 88 players on the roster. They have a 91-man off-season roster because of the roster exemption for international tight end Bernhard Sekewicz. And so they added that. So they made some moves. Let's run down those moves really quickly, and then where's the impact of that? They signed a new long snapper, Jack Coco, who was the Green Bay Packers long snapper a season ago as a rookie. And to make room for him, they put undrafted rookie out of Oklahoma State, Matt Hembro, on injured reserve. So he's done. They signed center Pat Elflein, former Minnesota Vikings. They signed veteran tight end Jeff Swain, and then released Chris Pierce was an undrafted rookie a year ago. And then they added a pair of receivers. Davion Davis, who played for he was on the Texans practice squad last year, but it was coming off of a season where he played for the USFL Birmingham Stallions, the two-time defending USFL champs, and also added Caden Davis, who was on Denver's practice squad last year. Of those additions for you, Seth, which are the most significant moves?
I think it's got to be kind of the quote-unquote obvious ones of Pat Elflein and Jeff Swaim, right? It probably signifies that with Elflein, they weren't exactly happy with or comfortable. I guess comfortable is probably the better word. With Froholt at center, you know, because I think their kind of depth chart was what? Froholt,
and then literally Froholt, four NFL starts at center, and those are the only four. The only four NFL games for any player on the roster at center. They don't really have a depth chart. So I couldn't really talk about what the depth chart looked like. But we know who's in the mix at center. The guys who play center. So there's Froholt. There's Lasita Smith, who learned center last year. They drafted John Gaines. He got a few. I know he got some reps at center early in the offseason. And then Hayden Howerton, a guy that was with, I think, the Titans and the Patriots. He played center in college, but, you know.
Yeah, so it just feels like, obviously, Pat, you know, comes in. He maybe if Froholt or Smith or Gaines, you know, one of those guys doesn't take hold of the situation, it's easy to pivot to Elflein, who started games last year, right? So it's a pretty simple thing. And then Swaim's just he's a solid, if unspectacular, tight end. I mean, there's not really much more you can say about it in terms of that. He's just he's a very good pro. I mean, I guess that's probably the best way to put it. He's a guy that has been very successful in the NFL and has played for a long time, but he's never been a standout, right? And so, you know, going back to Elflein real quick, he played six games at guard last year, but before that he played nine games at center for Carolina, and then he's kind of bounced around since he left the Minnesota Vikings. You know, Swaim is a guy that it makes sense. I mean, you're talking about a guy that will come in. GM Monty Austin Fort knows what he gets out of him. I don't think there's been any crossover with Petzing or those guys, but you know, he's been with Tennessee the last three seasons. It's basically a guy that plays about 50% of the snaps every season in Tennessee, and it probably signifies that. Even though, when do they have to designate Pup?
I think tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow is when they will make the moves, because practice begins on Thursday. I don't know if they did their conditioning test today. I know the media will get to see a closed practice tomorrow. So maybe they did their conditioning test today already, or they'll do the conditioning test and have a practice. I don't know what that's going to do, but I know before they actually start practice, that has to happen because PUP has to happen then, because if you're not on it, then you can't ever be put on it.
Yeah, and so you look at it, you know, and it'll be out before this releases, likely. We shouldn't say definitely, but likely. That we'll know that probably Zach Ertz is either on the PUP or not ready to go. However, you know, it'll be a couple weeks into the season. So bringing in a Jeff Swaim, right? A guy that's a veteran tight end. Cause that was something we talked about a couple weeks ago, right? We were like, well, they got Trey McBride, and then it's a lot of guys that don't want to have to.
When I was doing my roster previews, I've been going through player by player, and I was like, what are their chances of making the roster? You've got Ertz, you've got McBride, they're making the roster. After that, literally everyone is young and improving. There's Noah Tojiai, who's got a handful of games, and he knows Jonathan Gannon, but the rest of it is like, they got a couple of priority free agent signees in the undrafted group. Like Blake Whitehart out of Wake Forest, they guaranteed $200,000 of a salary, so it kind of feels like he's going to be in the mix. But adding Swayman there, it then takes all of those young guys, and it feels like they're probably now battling for perhaps a spot on the roster slash practice squad places. Although I imagine Ertz will be ready, but it gives you three legitimate guys. Swain doesn't catch the ball a lot, but If you're talking about the type of offense that they want to run, he was doing a power run blocking type things while he was with Tennessee, and so that's kind of what you want to see. Elf line's interesting because what are the two positions on the offensive line that are really feel uncertain? Center and left guard, and those are the positions that Elf line has played. Now, I don't know if you want to come in and say that we're going to count on Elf line to do anything. The dude's played in 22 games over the last three seasons combined. He's never made it through an entire season playing every game. He was at 14, 14, 15. Now, I mean, that's good enough for offensive line, but then 7, 9, and 6. He was a guy that early in the offseason I kind of pegged as a potential guy because he does have ties with Petsing because he was there in Minnesota when Petsing was there from 2017 to and beyond. That's when he played center mostly then. Was with Minnesota, but I mean, I think what it does is just it creates a little more competition because we always felt, honestly, did we really think when they were trying to create a steady veteran offensive line or talented offensive line kind of upgrade that they were going to leave that pivot position to a guy that's played four NFL games at the position? I never thought that that's one of those gambles like, hey, scouting, we think he's going to be good. But it just felt like, you know, Froholtz is what he is. Like, he's a guy that you if they added him for depth, sweet. You're like, he's going to be the starter? I'm a little worried about that. So Elfline's a guy who you know can do it, but you don't know how long he's going to be able to, because that list of centers that was available, old and broken. He's 29 years old, but he falls into the broken category. Basically, the centers that were left on them were old and broken. Rodney Hudson, who's retired, Ben Jones, guys like that. We kind of thought that would be the direction, but Elfline makes sense. It'll be interesting. I feel like that'll be a competition between him and Froholtz or something like that. Because I don't think Elfline is necessarily going to be in the mix on left guard because they've got two veteran guys I think that they trust for the left guard position in Elijah Wilkinson and Dennis Daly. Swain makes sense. I have my eye, just a little bit, and that's on the long snapper, Jack Coco, because he has played a full NFL season, snapped every game for the Packers last season. They had an undrafted guy and then re-signed Aaron Brewer late in the offseason. Supposedly, he was healthy. So by adding Coco, I'm wondering which one of these it is. If it is primarily competition, where they brought back Brewer because they know what he is, but they're maybe trying to move on. Or two, because Brew was injured, if it is the intention is to slow roll him back, is to, you know, recondition him, have a plan for him to slowly get those reps up. I'm not sure which one of those it is, although at Brewer's age and the fact that he's had a couple of injuries, it wouldn't be bad to have a guy in the building that you can trust. And since Coco played a full season in the NFL, I feel much more comfortable with a guy like him.
Yeah, and that makes sense. And, you know, my only speculation is that they just want somebody in just in case something goes wrong, right?
Or like, just to limit his snaps. Because
that's what I mean, yeah. For Brewer. Yeah, like either he's not fully healthy or in case they are worried about a recurrence or things like that, you know, they have somebody already on. Because that is one of the things we've talked about before, right? Long snappers get snapped up, no pun intended, and then like literally aren't available for like 8 to 10 years.
Right, totally. The two receivers, I would consider those are mostly kind of, you know, they're just churning the roster type thing. They add a couple of receivers to the room. They don't have a lot of spots available for the receiver room. You know, Hollywood's going to be there. You know, Rondale Moore's going to be there. You know, Zach Pascal's going to be there. Michael Wilson's going to be there. You presume Greg Dortch is going to be there. I don't think it's a lock this year because it's a new coaching staff. But if they're going to keep six receivers, you have four, maybe five that are locks. And then after that, it's a battle of who's going to compete for that. And I think both guys, the kid out of Birmingham for the USFL, Davian Davis, and then Caden Davis, I think both Davises are...
The Davises.
I think the both Davises are simply... their camp bodies trying to prove themselves. So they're guys to, okay, hey, let's see what they have.
Right, and that's kind of what we're looking at now and seeing what they can figure out with all of this. And that's the key with these things is obviously there's so much unknown moving in. So we just kind of have to be patient and see how this plays out. But these feel and we hate saying this. It's not like we want this to be true or anything like that, but it just feels like they're camp bodies.
Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise of Fury podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web, let's move on and talk about what we're looking forward to most in this training camp. That's coming up next on Rise of Fury Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast. Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Seth Cox and I talking about the Arizona Cardinals training camp. It is the training camp preview. Want to talk about what are we looking for? Not the position battles. We're going to talk about that next. But what is it that we're looking for? What are we most looking forward to? Training camp is an interesting time. But for me, I'm going to say this. You know, while there are low expectations, I'm, you know, part fan, but part just for my part of the job, what we do, I'm super intrigued about camp because this will be the first time we get to see how they're lining up, what types of work are they doing, what types of plays are they running and practicing, how does the defense line up. It's not going to necessarily predict things, but you can see personnel groups, some of the plays that they kind of draw up, how the rotation looks so far. That I geek out about that type of stuff. I like paying attention to that because it kind of, you know, lends us to believe what the progression is on the roster moving forward. So number one is I'm excited to see some of the actual football and how that's going to look because we spent the last four seasons with Cliff Kings where we got used to that. And, you know, we've seen how rosters were put together before. This is all new. I'm excited for that.
Yeah, that's one of the big things that I'm looking forward to. And you know, I break it down into a couple things. Obviously, we're not talking about battles. But I'm looking forward to, you know, for me, like the football nerd, I want to see the deployment of formations and things like that. But I know that's going to be mostly limited, especially in the open practices and things like that. Secondly, I'm really interested to see the rotations in general. You know, not even the like head-to-heads, but like how are these rotations going to look along the defensive line at the linebacker position, especially. And then there's individual like players that I'm interested in. Obviously, I mean, we can go with the easy ones like Isaiah Simmons, Zaven Collins, right? All offseason they were working at different positions.
Or was it like the coaches kind of suggested is they're creating versatility for Zaven Collins? But I'm like, isn't a new defense? If he's not getting any reps at inside backer, you can't really think he's going to get reps at inside backer. But yeah. We'll see. Simmons was like, they said, yeah, he's a safety. And he said he's a safety. And the, even the team on their on their graphics when he interviewed has him as a safety. They just haven't changed him on the team site roster. But yeah, I want to see. I do want to see those guys and how they look, honestly.
And I'll tell you this too. I'm really excited. There's a couple guys I'm really excited about. First one's Owen Popoa. I think, you know, obviously another easy one's Paris Johnson, but Popoa, he just screams a Jonathan Gannon linebacker. Does he not? Like that just athletic, semi-undersized, kind of freaky talent, you know, kind of similar to Kaiser White. But, and again, you know.
Only he played linebacker because Kaiser White was an EB.
But it also... It also won't mean that he'll be like be as good as Kaiser White, but man, Popoa is one of the freakiest athletes we've ever seen at the linebacker position. I mean, he's just a freak.
Well, and you know what? What's kind of interesting is who was that linebacker last year? But he came out of Auburn too. He was the exact opposite. He looked really good, but was unathletic. Well,
yeah,
relatively unathletic. But he was an Auburn linebacker, so you get. Get Papo, who's coming out of Auburn, but freaky athletic, and if he can come out with some of the same technique and skills, you're like, there's some real potential there. Who was that guy last year? I can't remember his name.
Chandler Wooten.
Yes, Chandler Wooten. Everyone, like certain guys on your site, you're like, he's got a lock for us. No, there's no, he's not going to make the team.
Yeah,
he's not going to make the team.
So I'm excited to see some of these guys because I think they're going to be fun players, and I'm excited to see, like you said, how they're deployed, how they're used. I'm excited to see how. I mean, I don't know what we're going to call them, but we can try to coin a phrase. But like, how are the Munchkins? Like, how do the Munchkins look? Like between Marquise Brown, Rondell Moore, Greg Dortch, like how do they look in this offense? And are they able to stay on the field, or is it going to force guys like Zach Pascal and Michael Wilson to get reps, right? Yeah. Like all of these things to me are really intriguing because it's not necessarily position battles, but I want to see how they're playing and how they're used and things like that. Because I mean, I know you and I have talked about it already, but like these position battles, like I don't feel like you and I have a strong opinion on who we want to win the position battles. We're just kind of like, let's see how this works out. But it's going to be interesting to see, even who's playing in them.
Yeah, totally. And of course, what might be the biggest intrigue is at what point does Kyler start practicing? If, in fact, he has a week one goal. I don't think that's going to be realistic, but does he start off training camp on PUP? Does he, like, and if he isn't, that could signal perhaps that he's going to get some work in training camp. And they'll still roll him, but how much work does Kyler get? How much work does Zach Ertz get? And on the smaller side is, who are the guys that are injured that we didn't know about? Who are coming to camp and are nursing injuries that no one knew about?
Yeah, that's always a question, isn't it? Like, who comes in and you're like, oh, this guy's not ready or this guy's hurting. Let's be honest. There are certain guys, while you've kind of hit the nail on the head about, like, it's a new system, everybody needs to be active and out there. There are certain guys we just don't worry too much about, right? James Conner, Buda Baker, DJ Humphrey. Even though his health is always, kind of a question, he's been around enough, So, but then there's everybody else. And it's like a guy like, for instance, Will Hernandez, right? Who's coming off of a injury kind of plague season and is fighting for now a long-term contract, he's back on a short-term contract. Is he able to make it through a full season and stay healthy? Obviously, Brown and Moore are question marks all the time, right? Like those guys, I mean, we talked about it with Brown last year when they traded for him, and then obviously Moore's been this way since college. Like, are they able to stay on the field and compete consistently? The defensive side, I mean, knock on wood right now, there's not as many guys that have, I mean, obviously Antonio Hamilton had the freak accident last year, which was devastating, but you know, there's not as many guys, but you know, between Brown and Moore, like I said, Humphreys is a wild card. I mean, you like to see him healthy because he's, you know, he's an important piece, but he's also a veteran. So like, it's not like he needs all the time in the world, but also if he's healthy, it's an improvement over the fact that, like you said, he's not always healthy. So it's just an interesting dynamic because I feel like offensively, there's a lot more questions about that than defensively.
Coming up next on the Rise Ups here at Podcast Spencer Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move on and talk about now specifically the position battles that mostly intrigue us. That's coming up next on Rise Ups here at. We're back on the Rise Ups here at Podcast Spencer Cardinals Talk on the Web. The other part, next part that will clearly be of intrigue is, and especially when you get to when the preseason games, the position battles. Who's getting more reps again ahead of whom? Who's looking better against guys? That is always tough because they mix and match who they're doing reps against. And, you know, Cardinals on Cardinals stuff is it. You know, remember, for example, Brandon Williams, that third round pick who was fairly new to the position, quarterback, just how great he looked in training camp against Michael Floyd. And then immediately looked like hot garbage in coverage on the field.
Hey, was it any coincidence that Floyd didn't play well after that either?
you know, you might have something there. But, I mean, especially, like, you get used to your teammates and how they do things and the play calls and things like that, so you can start anticipating type things. But that said, I think... And I wrote about this, like, the most notable position battle. And I think we're going to be staring at right tackle because you bring back Kelvin Beachum, who started a gazillion games in his career, was the Cardinals' starting right tackle for the last three seasons, and then re-sign him to a two-year deal. His money is completely guaranteed this year. And then you go and draft Paris Johnson. And he should be the now in the future, but I don't think Beachum's going to go down quietly. He's not going to make it easy for it. So I'm going to be really interested to see how that works out. And if at all, where else does Beachum get work? Because I think there's a potential as well, especially if Josh Jones, that group of Paris Johnson, Kelvin Beachum, and Josh Jones, super intriguing to me because I don't think that all three – that there's room for all three on the roster, personally, like when you're building the offensive line. I just don't think you have enough spots to have your left tackle, have a right tackle, and have two true other tackles to do that. And so will Beachum end up getting traded? Because he's the type of guy, you know, veteran who could help a playoff-type team or a young team who's kind of building and or is trying to take the next step and they have an injury, while Jones probably has the higher, you know, value.
Value
because he's young. But is that the type of guy you want to just trade away when potentially you could bring him back and he's one of your starting tackles, depending on what they decide to do with DJ Humphreys, because you could move on from his contract this next year?
Yeah, and it's tough because you've got, you know, this is what happens when new regimes come in, right? Like, this is one of the things is guys that were potentially intriguing young guys now don't necessarily have a place on the roster. And, you know, you can question it or disagree with it all you want, but the reality is there's a legitimate chance that this team looks at Elijah Wilkinson and or Dennis Daly is a more valuable asset than Josh Jones. That's not to say it's right or wrong. It just might be for Monty, for Petzing, for Gannon, for those guys, they might view those guys as more valuable assets.
Well, because both are true, like, guard tackle swing guys, because Elijah Wilkinson can play guard, he can play tackle. Dennis Daly didn't play well at tackle, but he started an entire season at left tackle and can play guard. And so in terms of versatility, Josh Jones can play tackle at guard, but I bet that both the other guys, Elijah Wilkinson and Daly, are better guards than Jones.
Yeah, and so that's, you know, that's just what it comes down to. And it's just situations like that that I think are hard for fans to grasp. Wouldn't you agree? Because,
yeah,
I mean, and nobody was a bigger Jones fan than me, but you never fully, and he earned a lot of, you know, bonuses for playing time, snaps played, things like that, but he never fully grabs a position as a starter. And then obviously they go out and draft a guy in Paris Johnson who's going to likely play over him immediately. You know, Beachum's a guy. I don't know if I expect Beachum to be on a move because I wonder if he's a guy that they want.
Well, because he can play both tackle positions. Either tackle. And, yeah. And he could slide in a guard. I think he's done that in his career. Yeah. But he started most of his career at left tackle. And now he started the last three at right tackle. So, you know, he's definitely reliable for sure. But yeah, that's just super intriguing because, like, the way they're building the roster, you would think that maybe you would rather have Jones on the roster than Beachum if Paris Johnson is your starter. But maybe he's the guy that you want to have. And he signed for 2 years. His contract basically is, hey, he's going to play this year, and then we can figure things out next year. But, yeah, that's the number one position. But honestly, there's two other. Like, there's the premier battle at right tackle, but you have a low-key battle at left guard because we don't know who's there other than what I've been told, that it looks like probably Elijah Wilkinson / Dennis Daly. And now we have the center one with Elflein and Froholt. So three spots on the offensive line appear to have legitimate position battles.
Yeah, and it's not surprising. I mean, you're, again, a new regime. They're going to bring in the guys that they want. And obviously, Justin Pugh left. Rodney Hudson left or retired, you know, and so those are the things that you look at and kind of try to figure out. I'm also intrigued, you know, we talked about it. Obviously, Ertz's health matters, but if Ertz is unavailable, are the top two tight ends just going to be Trey McBride and Jeff Swaim, or do one of these younger guys potentially have a chance? You know, with Swaim maybe brought in for the same thing we discussed about with Elflein earlier of like, hey, a veteran, we know what we're going to get out of this guy. Can one of these guys beat him out type of thing?
Yeah, I guess that's totally true because like it shows. Now, some of the guys, like, they released Chris Pierce, no big deal. He was an undrafted guy a year ago. I don't know where Zykovitz is in his development.
It really feels like that's just a continuous thing that they use to have an extra guy on the roster.
Well, and it's kind of like a commitment that they do when they got that added. Like, why wouldn't you? It's an international player. You have the exemption. Why wouldn't you keep him on? But it does make it a little bit different because it's a complete new coaching staff. But they brought in, like, Togiai kind of made sense as kind of one of those guys that's a glue guy on the roster, can play some special teams, but has only a handful of games in his career. But then when they go out and the kid, Blake Whitehart, $200,000 of guaranteed salary in 2023. That sort of suggests that he's going to be here. If you remember, like if we go back to Chris Streveler, they guaranteed that much, and they made sure that he was on the roster. You could do the practice squad, that's a little bit more, I think, what, like the $200,000, a little bit more than what a practice squatter makes all season. But like when you pay a guy that much, it's kind of like drafting him. And then the Michigan tight end, Joe Honiford, who was a former offensive lineman, as a blocking tight end, that's a specific little niche that you can have on your roster. So, yeah, I guess unless – I don't know if Swain was coming off of an injury at all. I see he played every game last season.
I was going to say he played it, but that's the thing is these guys are always banged up, especially this far into their career. I mean, the reality is that they're not healthy ever at this point. So, I am going through his injury list stuff. He's a lot of it's just been concussion related. He had an ankle back in 2020. So nothing since then. He's had a ton of concussions. Holy cow.
Oh my gosh. We know McBride and Ertz are going to be there, and
it's just a matter of when with Ertz. I mean, that's just a question.
Because of like week one seems reasonable because it's 10 months out. And so I like to see that, but you'd think the Swain move, if it were earlier in the offseason, would feel like he's a lock for the roster. It is right now. I'm probably going to do a pre-training camp now that they made some roster moves, a roster prediction. Maybe I'll wait till the weekend to do that. And Swain will probably be on there. Swain will probably be on there, I would imagine. But that's kind of the low-key one. The next, I don't know if it's like it's not a high-key, like a notable roster position battle, but what in the world is the defensive line rotation going to look like? You can kind of like, there's two guys where you think would be the lead two. It would be LJ Collier and Carlos Watkins. Watkins, who's a fine NFL player, and Collier, who has the talent, former first round pick, now kind of being pushed more in on the interior than that he's played before. You'd figure those two, but how is that defensive line rotation going to look? Because let's be honest, that rotation is light on proven talent.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, you talked about it. It feels like Collier, Watkins, and then we like Lawrence and Fotu, but they're going to have some questions to answer. Kevin Strong seems like a lock to make the roster, but he's kind of been 20-25% snap guy his whole career. Like, I think if he's playing more than that, you're probably in a pickle. Just kind of probably not ideal. From there, you look at it, they brought in, obviously, Dante Stills. He's an intriguing guy, but he's still a late day three type of pick.
You never bank on them, although His skill set is super intriguing.
It's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And so, you just look at it and you go, yikes. I don't know how else to put it. Like, it's not ideal. After Collier and Watkins, I just don't know what to expect. I think the goal starting lineup, if I had to predict, would be Collier, Watkins, and Lawrence. But you want to talk about a guy that's always hurt.
Jeez,
I mean,
yeah.
That's just for sure, Lawrence.
Know.
So we'll see how it works out. I think that's their goal. Those are always iffy.
The second inside backer spot for me is intriguing because
so intriguing.
Because, I mean, like, especially from the time Jonathan Gannon was hired and then they brought in Kaiser White. We're like, okay, they're set at linebacker. They're going to be a 4-3 defense. It's going to be Collins. It's going to be Simmons. It's going to be White. Yeah. And now it's basically for 3-4-ish. And the only thing we know is White because Collins is the edge. Simmons is a safety. Like, who's that other guy going to be? Like, right now, I would lean Chris Barnes, but Josh Woods could be that guy. It could be, and since they're going young, it could be Papo or even Kyle Soley, the undrafted kid out of Arizona State. He's a smart enough kid to do that.
This is legitimately one of those situations where you just look at it and you go, all right, let's see how this unfolds, because there's definitely a position battle. I mean, if the linebackers go, if the linebackers just go Collins and White inside with Thomas and Sanders outside, it's pretty chalky, wouldn't you say? Like that's kind of what we're expecting. But the question becomes, is that what Jonathan Gannon and Nick Rollis are thinking, or is that?
I think what's kind of the linebacker, like the edge rotation, I think you're going to see, like, and Cam Thomas, big. He's going to be counted on this year. And I think Collins will be, because they like that. So, like, you look at the edge guys that they had in Philly, they both kind of fit that size. And then Ojulari / Sanders, MyJ Sanders will be the rotational guys, however they are, you know, deployed.
Yeah, and that's what's going to be interesting, because I think it's the same, you know, when you look at whether it's that inside backer position or the two outside linebacker positions. Like, I think those are kind of open battles. You know, your point being completely accurate. But again, Sanders, Thomas, and for that matter, Collins are all guys that they're not Gannon, they're not Rallis guys. You know, like, and not to say that necessarily Barnes or Woods are, but they may favor what they bring and what they see and what they know more than what these other guys do. So it'll be interesting just to kind of see how it all unfolds, because the defense, I mean, the offense is interesting, but it's like you said, it's a lot of like the linemen, and we think we know what we're going to see in a lot of instances. But the defense is, I don't want to say a complete unknown, but it feels nearly like a complete unknown.
Yeah, because cornerback is like, they didn't do hardly anything in cornerback. What's that going to look like? Is it going to be the Vance Joseph group of Marco Wilson and Antonio Hamilton? Is that really going to be that? Or is someone else going to, like, Keytrell Clark, is he going to step up? When can Garrett Williams play? Those are all, and then the other guys that are rostered, you know, Chris Boyd is basically a special teams guy. And then everyone else seems to be just guys.
Well, and I mean, even going back to it, what is the defense going to be run out of? I mean, we talked about it. We thought they were going to come in, go 4-3. Now it kind of feels like it's going to be a 3-4, but
it really probably might be
a 4-2-5.
4-2-5, truly. So giving it, you know, for making it basically a 4-3, because you can use Simmons in a versatile, well, and honestly, either Baker, Buddha, or Isaiah Simmons can be used closer to the line of scrimmage, kind of like a coverage type linebacker or a linebacker type safety. So in the essence, it's kind of like a 4-3, but you're playing big nickel out of base.
Right, and that's what it feels like. is what they're looking at. So, and that's the thing is, you know, they'll use Simmons as that big nickel. And so then who comes off the field, right? Like,
yeah.
How does that work? Is it Lawrence and then it's Collier Watkins inside and Sanders and Thomas outside? And, you know, so there's just so much actually fun, intriguing pieces coming to this. Here, like it genuinely is.
I got a question for you because this is something that surprised me. And I brought it up when I was on the PHNX podcast the other day, but as we haven't talked about it since, when, in my opponent preview with Glenn Irby over at the Eagles Wire, he talked about Jonathan Gannon and said he and Nick Rollis, and I did not know this, so I don't know if it's accurate or not, but I trust him because he's all things Eagles, that both Rollis and Gannon are, and we know Mike Zimmer, but are they Vic Fangio disciples? Because Irby said that. And if that's true, that would sort of suggest some of the alignment. Because when he told me that, I was like, wait, what?
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. What's his history? So
if you're doing the indie defense, at least, is there any sort of Fangio influence?
So he is a Zimmer disciple. As
for sure. Like Zimmer, we knew.
But, and I think, I mean, they may have crossed paths somewhere, but I don't see. And like you said, they know more than we do about that. but, you know, it's just, I don't see it. Doesn't mean it's not on there.
Right.
Well, so here's where it might be. So, I mean, and it's, you know, it's that 6 degrees of separation type stuff. Let me double check, make sure I've got my wires crossed here. Don't have my wires crossed. So, well, no, that wasn't the same time. Because Fangio was in Houston when Ken Flagioli was in Carolina. So, yeah, I don't see it. But, again, it doesn't mean that it's not something. Yeah, but
that's just something random. But, yeah, so I wanted to ask you that. Okay. Let's move on from that, going to the next section. Coming up on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best Eric Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on to talk about who are the players with potential to surprise. We know who the Cardinals are counting on, but who might be a surprise? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best Eric Cardinals talk on the web. Seth Cox and I talking about the Cardinals training camp. It's our training camp preview. We want to kind of talk about now the every year there are players who kind of stand out. I'm not talking about those back end of the Ed roster guys. We're not talking about the undrafted rookie quarterback that we think should be the backup, like the guys we've run across, or the undrafted receiver who stands out that never does anything in their career. That's fine. Those storylines will play out. They always do. Legitimately, who are the guys who we think are under the radar surprising guys? And if I'm kind of looking at one, I kind of want to look at, you know, I don't know if it's like someone I think is going to stand out that we don't expect to at that linebacker position. Whether it's Josh Woods, Chris Barnes, he's kind of a known commodity. But when they signed Barnes, like we liked the move, but I don't think anyone would have expected that he would be in the running for the starting job.
No, and I'm going to tell you, I already talked about him, but you know, Owen Pippo is the guy I think can play. I know he's a fifth rounder and yeah. Things like that, but I really think that, you know, just looking, and maybe I'm just projecting too much, and it's completely plausible, but just looking at Gannon and his defenses and then what he's coached in his time, right? So you go, you know, obviously with the Eagles the last 2 years, and we talked about, I believe it was Mike Edwards and then Kaiser White, right? and then you go to the Colts, right? And obviously Sirianni's, or sorry, Eberflus is the DC and everything there. But you go, Gannon was the linebackers coach at the time, or cornerbacks coach, you know. But and so you even go then, and look at those linebackers, and obviously Shaq Leonard's a freaky guy. He was drafted early, so you know, he's not necessarily the guy. But you look at these other guys, right? You look at like the Anthony Walker and the Bobby Okereke's, these guys that are fifth rounders and late third rounders that are coming out and ending up putting up just massive numbers and becoming really good NFL players. It's kind of ingrained in their DNA. And that's the other thing that you look at in the Gannon kind of coaching disciple things, you know, and I get it. He was just an assistant coach and defensive quality control coach and things like that. But, you know, you go back, even back when he was in Tennessee, and you see kind of the profile there, right? You see these guys that are not necessarily high draft picks, that are coming out and playing really well and leading strong defenses. And that's, you know, like you said, that's where guys kind of develop their, how they decide to dispose or, you know, go after things. And he's got a history and he comes from lineages of where guys that are mid to late day two and day three picks are high level contributors to their defenses. I think that's, you know, why I like, and like I said, maybe I'm reading way too much into it, but that's why I like him. I'm really interested to see Keytrell Clark, another, I know it's a late day three guy, but I think he's a guy that loves to compete.
Yeah. He seems to be one of those guys that will flash in camp and even a little preseason against some of the lower end receivers that he's going to play against in the preseason, but
right,
just be a touch short, right, to crack the rotation probably.
Yeah. And that's what you wonder about. And then offensively, it's kind of a cheap one, but I'm really, really intrigued about Trey McBride's second year.
Right. Well, that for me, that wouldn't be a surprise. That's a guy that I know, like there's a handful of guys that, you know, the Cardinals are counting on them to take another step. Trey McBride's one of them. They need him to be better. Cam Thomas, they're counting on him to be a starting caliber player. For me, those wouldn't be surprises. They're expectations for me.
I would just be surprised because we never have good tight ends.
So. That's so true. The fact that, like,
if it actually happened,
Zach Ertz, in his 11 games in 2021, tied the franchise's single season records for receptions in a season for a tight end with 57 in 11 games. And he was pacing for between 70 and 80 last year. He'd have blown that record away. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that number that's there. But I think,
yeah,
I think that running backs that I don't know what the guy I think has a chance to surprise is actually Tyson Williams. That could be that sneaky guy to do more than what's expected. Like, people are looking at Keontae Ingram. I don't know what to expect from him. And even Amari DeMarcado, the undrafted rookie kid. But I think if I'm pointing, like, if there's a guy who I think quietly could be much better than anyone thinks, I think Tyson Williams would be that guy.
Well, and it's always hard to project, you know, again, late round picks from other organizations, or not other organizations, but other regimes, right? Like, we liked Keontae Ingram. We thought he was an intriguing guy, but, like, you know, And so then you have a Tyson Williams who was bounced around quite a bit, played a game last year, obviously, for the Cardinals, but he's shown some flashes in his chances, averaging over 5 yards a carry.
BYU running backs have been sneaky, kind of productive.
And I just think it's one of those. I think it's just one of those positions because it's so obvious about James Conner that there's somebody's got to grab that wheel, right, as the main backup.
Yeah, it's got to be. And somebody has to step up because and when they brought in Damien Williams, like, I felt forever that they're going to bring in a veteran running back at some point. They brought in the veteran center that we all expected to happen at some point during this season, but they still haven't done it with the running back position. And maybe, you know, maybe they just like to see, they want to give these young guys as much. Cause like Corey Clement, he's had a little bit of production. Like he's rushed for, you know, a couple hundred yards, a couple of seasons. But the other guys are completely unproven in the league. You've got one rookie and a guy that's got a game. And then, well, I guess Tyson Williams played a few more games for Baltimore, but didn't really do much. And then you've got Keontae. And he has intriguing talent, but again, he was scouted, drafted, and coached by a completely different group. And so that you never know what, you know, the fact that this coaching staff has taken Isaiah Simmons, moved him to safety, has taken David Collins and moved him to the edge, which we suggested maybe some teams had and were thinking would be his place because of his size, and they're doing that. So you wonder about, does Keontae Ingram fit? Now, there are some people who suggest that he's a really good fit for their offense, but you know, we just didn't see much from him last year. Anybody else that you think could be a surprise, you know, in a guy that stands out, a surprising standout in camp in the preseason?
It's going to be interesting because the only other guy that is kind of interesting is a guy we mentioned earlier in Dante Stills, because I mean, it's not that like Leku or Fotu and Lawrence are bad or Strong or Ledbetter, but we kind of know what they are even when healthy, right? Like Watkins, we know what he is. He's going to be a fantastic, you know, 60% snap guy for this defense. Collier, obviously, like you said, the expectations are pretty high for him, or in terms of what they need from him. But because there's such an opening for snaps along the defensive line, doesn't it feel like a guy like Stills, who has, you know, maybe not quite the dynamic and edge that Darnell Dockett, but has a similar skill set to Darnell Dockett. Doesn't that just feel like it's ripe to kind of?
Yeah. Having that happen, like if you got Papo and you get Dante Stills and Keetra, it gives you some real excitement about this draft class, something that, you know,
you haven't had.
We haven't had because it's just been so hard because the way they build the roster with veterans and stuff, it's been hard for rookies to crack the rotation, and they're just trying to build young. If there's one player I think who has the potential to be far better than last year, I'm intrigued, and I wonder if Marco Wilson can take a big step forward. The fact that they didn't go out and make any real moves at cornerback, I think that suggests that they believe in the type of ceiling that Marco Wilson has. And with putting him in a new defensive scheme with a guy like Jonathan Gannon, and then you see what he was able to do with those cornerbacks in Philly. Because remember, Darius Slay looked washed up for a year, and James Bradbury was declining, and they're both like two of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. Marco Wilson's athletic profile, he has like top cornerback in the league type potential, especially with the athleticism and the skill set. I'm super intrigued to see. I think he quietly could be a very surprising player this year.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, like you said, it's going to be interesting to see how this all works out, because there's so many chances for guys to make an impact this year, right? That we haven't seen in the past or haven't expected in the past. So it'll be intriguing to see how all of these guys, but, you know, especially the ones that we're kind of highlighting, and it's kind of wish casting from us at the same time, because this is, you know, the first step in this rebuild, retool, whatever you want to call it. So we realize that there's going to be, you know, it's going to be times where it's a little bit disappointing or not as much fun, but like, that's part of the fun, is to see if these guys are going to, if they're going to take that step, or guys like Jess said, like if you end up getting contributions from one of Papo, Stills, or Clark, that's huge. But can you imagine getting two of them?
Right.
I mean, God forbid, three of them.
Well, yeah, and you see a step up that way. But and that doesn't mean that we're saying guys that surprise in camp in the preseason doesn't mean that they're going to be stars of the regular season. Like, we're cognizantly aware of how this defense on paper looks kind of awful. And there will, especially to begin the season, I will bet that this defense will have some awful struggles. But that as they gel within the scheme and the unit, that this will become a competitively okay defense by midseason, by the second half of the season. They won't be great, but they won't be terrible. They'll be competitively all right.
Right, and that's the big thing.
We will end this edition. That wraps up this edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Mr. Cardinals talking with our training camp preview. Think we'll try and do a second show this week and then kind of go on from there, kind of our regular show sequences over the next several weeks. We know we still haven't done our divisional rankings show, so maybe we can throw that in this week. But now we're back in podcast season. There's football. We'll be talking about training camp news, preseason games, roster cuts, and all that. Those are coming up over the next several weeks. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.